Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm grateful to have Corey Carlson on the show today. Corey is the co-founder of Rise Community, author, podcast host, executive coach, and keynote speaker. Well, Corey Carlson, it is so good to have you on the Something Extra podcast today. Thank you so much for making the time to be on the show.
Well, Lisa, thank you very much for having me. Before you hit record, I've enjoyed this conversation, just getting to know you. And so thank you very much for the opportunity.
So, Corey, I think you and I, we kind of met by happenstance. We have got a mutual friend, love this guy. I know you do too, Jim Bechtold. And I was on his Monday morning 8 a.m. leadership call, and you were on the call. And then you like reached out to me and said, "Hey, I noticed you're going to be on the call. We should know each other." And you reached out to me on LinkedIn, and the rest is history. And I'm so excited because I think you and I are very much aligned with our beliefs and our values and kind of our philosophies on life. And so I'm just really grateful that we connected and getting to know you and sharing your wisdom with our listeners today. So thanks so much for that.
Oh, well, thanks. As a mentor told me, wisdom is spelled W-I-S-D-U-M-B. So it's wisdom that I've learned from, you know, making some dumb mistakes along the way.
Oh my goodness. I say it all the time. I will tell people, you see all these SOPs that we have and all this written documentation about processes?
Right.
It's usually because I did something wrong or had a misstep. But, you know, I know, and this is really kind of fun because I know that you graduated with a degree in civil engineering from Mizzou.
Yes.
In Columbia. So that's fun because we've got so many of our young people in St. Louis that end up going to Mizzou. Great school.
We loved it. Absolutely loved it. Met my wife there and got a civil engineering degree. I don't touch that degree at all anymore, but I'm grateful for the experience at Mizzou. It was awesome.
Yeah. So who was there someone who inspired you, Corey, to pursue that degree? Or did you have somebody in your family? Why did you pursue that degree in civil engineering?
I think a couple reasons. I did have in high school, I didn't have any family members that did engineering. So it wasn't a family, but just some of the older guys I looked up to, they were going to Mizzou for engineering. And so I was kind of paying attention to that. I was better at math than I was English. I was awful at English, which is crazy. I went on to write some books, but I was kind of good at math, so I thought I'd do it. I also love development. I love cities. I love downtown and seeing just growth. I've always loved it, even still to this day. And so that's why I went down the path of engineering, because I didn't know what else to do. And that seemed like that would be a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember there is, well, he's chair of the board now, but a large construction firm here in St. Louis. And he's got a civil engineering degree. But I remember him telling me that as a little boy, we had the Missouri Botanical Gardens here, which is a beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is
if
beautiful.
You haven't visited the Missouri Botanical Gardens. And I remember him telling me that he would skip school and go and watch the climatron being built. And he was so fascinated, kind of like what you said, by cities and building and architecture. And that's why he decided to go that route. Now he owns a large construction firm here. But, you know, sometimes it's just you kind of get intrigued by certain things, right?
And, yeah, your curiosity.
Yeah, curiosity, right?
I think that probably drives a lot of decisions we all make is that curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, you went on and interned. Well, you interned for Burns & McDonald, which is a wonderful engineering firm in KC, and you interned for them every summer, right? And then ended up getting hired.
Yeah, they were awesome. You know, there was a movie that came out. We always kind of joked about Michael J. Fox, Secret to Success, whatever the exact name was. I mean, I did not do the success part, but I started out in the mailroom. I did the mailroom as the intern, and then every summer interned in their aviation division. Great company, loved the company. I had incredible bosses from Renita and Doug, and just beyond grateful for them. And so me leaving Burns McDonald wasn't any indication of them as a company, more just me. I love Burns McDonald. A lot of great opportunities, and I was there for about 4 years after school, got my PE, just trying to still check the boxes of, I think this is the way I want to go. So I'll get my PE, but I didn't love it. I wasn't fulfilled. And so ended up exploring MBA and LSAT. I didn't go to law school. I chose to go the MBA route. But then, Lisa, I got involved in a company that did technical sales, where we sold civil engineering products, storm sewer, bridges, and I loved it. I love this idea of taking the technical blended with, I don't want to say people skills, meaning engineers don't have people skills.
Yes.
But for me, it was taking the technical, keeping it at surface level. I didn't have to go crazy deep on the technical, but then working with people and helping to solve their problems, whatever they had on a construction site, and working on that consultative selling, that's was awesome. I was like, I want to do this.
Yeah. You and I have more in common than I even realized, Corey. Because I have a degree in accounting. And so I went into McDonnell Douglas right out of school to practice corporate accounting. And loved McDonnell Douglas. Again, had amazing people that poured into me. John McDonnell was even the president at the time. And I got an invitation to have lunch with him with 9 other young professionals. Loved McDonnell Douglas, but did not love accounting. And after about 5 years, I'm like, this just doesn't fuel me. And so I left McDonnell Douglas and went into corporate sales for another Fortune 500 company. And same way, I'm like, I love meeting with people and helping them solve their challenges. And so we have more in common. But, you know, it's every step. Here's what I would say to a young person. Don't be afraid to pivot, for one thing.
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely.
It is okay. And if you're not loving something, you figure out what you do love, because you spend a lot of time at work, right?
Yeah.
And figure out what fuels you. It's okay. I've met so many people that are doing something totally different than what they went to school for.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
And I think to that young person on that, if you're thinking of leaving, but really do check your heart on why you're leaving, because there is a piece of just working in corporate America where there has to be some resilience built up.
Yes.
If the project's hard or you don't really like your boss, that doesn't mean you leave. Because, I mean, fast forward in my career, there was a season where I had the most difficult boss I ever had, but I learned so much. And now what I do as an executive coach and speaker, I will pull from those years of experience so often because of what I learned and how I had to adapt, or maybe things I did wrong. And it just was so helpful. So to that young person, absolutely. If you want to leave, you don't have, just because you got a degree in it doesn't mean you have to do it for life. But if you do leave, just check your heart to make sure you're just not running from something hard.
That's
just doing my, devotion this morning, and was reminded of, and they talk about, many listeners probably have heard this story before, but just a reminder of when a storm happens, the difference between cattle and bison. Cattle will run from the storm, which in fact, they have to stay with it longer because they're running with the storm versus bison or buffalo. They run into the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's sometimes we actually just need to run into the storm. It's better for us.
We run into the storm, and I would go as far to say you learn more in the storm sometimes than you do on the summit. So, right. So yeah, there's so much wisdom packed in there. I'm glad that you brought that up, and don't run away from hard things. But you know, for me, I'm like, I think I really want to do sales. I want to do sales, but you know, they were not going to let a 24-year-old sell F-18s. So I had to go and totally pivot. But you know, you after that, then you went on to Contact. And I think you were president of sales, Groundwork Solutions. What was your, during this time, Corey, what I really want to camp out on is what was your mindset? What was your mindset about you, your career, success, all of that during this time?
Well, I had a few different mindsets during that time, which is part of my story. Yeah, so I left Burns McDonald. I went to Contact. I did sales, started in Kansas City, got promoted, moved to Denver, and then managed a bunch of people in states, and then got promoted and moved to Cincinnati, where I was vice president of sales and managing a $120 million division. And so there's a couple different mindsets I had at the different times. And Kansas City, unfortunately, is probably all about myself climbing the ladder. Let's go sell. I mean, you give me a sales challenge, I'm going to go try to win. And had success and got to do some cool things like go to the Ryder Cup and go to a trip in Mexico. And like I went for those. And at the time, it was about myself at the expense of my family, which is a bummer. And then I went to Denver. I started to get better, less about me, more about team as I was leading individuals. I also worked for one of my best bosses out there. And so he modeled it well for me. And then when I got to Cincinnati, I would say that was the biggest pivotal change for me as a leader. And you know, truth be told, Lisa, it kind of took running into a storm. It kind of took hitting a low to realize I needed help. But as I was in charge of this $120 million division or a VP of it, I had imposter syndrome. I had just leapfrogged my boss. I was now managing him. I was managing people older than me, people who've been the company or industry longer. And so this imposter syndrome, really just how it manifested was I skipped the gym. I skipped quiet time. Kids playing on the floor in the family room at night, and my face is buried in the laptop. And I was like, there's got to be a better way. What's going on? And anyways, I went to my boss, talked to him, who I really liked. And he just said, get an executive coach. I've always had one. And I was like, man, I wish you would have told me this sooner. Anyways, I did, in fact, get an executive coach. That's about 13 years ago, and I've had one ever since. Even though I do it now for a living, I now have a coach because the outside perspective, the accountability, the encouragement and challenge at the same time, it's made me lead better. This particular coach I had wasn't just about work. It was home and work.
Mm-hmm.
And so beginning then is when I really started to lead differently, Lisa. So you talk about the mindset. That's when my mindset became, hey, it's just not about work. I thought it was just about work for so long. If I'm going to be a good man, a good, employee, then I just need to crush it at work. And what I saw, Lisa, is over my 20-year career, I had 18 bosses in one family. But I made choices for those 18 bosses at the expense of my family. And to be honest, I don't even know if those people are alive or where they live.
Mm-hmm.
But yet I sacrificed. And starting with that coach, I just started leading differently. When I met with my one-on-one, my direct reports, I said, hey, how's it going at home? How's it going at work?
Yeah.
What are your goals for this year in both? I just started talking that way. And I saw change. I saw change in those leaders as I had experienced. And that's when I was like, all right, let's go. Let's do this for a living.
That's so cool. That is so cool. Well, and I think you and your wife started going to Crossroads.
Yes.
Which is mega church in Cincy. Jim Bechtold was one of the founders, Brian Tome, Brian Wells that we've talked about. And that changed you too. Cause I think you got into a program called 3DM.
That's right. Yes. That's a cool God story. We moved from Denver to Cincinnati. I volunteered once and Kim is her name. Kim put my name in a hat to go through that 3DM program after one volunteering session. So I apologize to anybody who's volunteered Crossroads Forever and they didn't get invited. I'm sorry. For me, I mean, that was a God thing. I went into that program. I got exposed to this particular executive coach. And that's when I just, it changed the trajectory of my life.
Right. Well, you talk a lot, Corey, and I'd love for you to camp out here because I do think this is so important. You talk a lot about identity and we're going to talk about your books. You've got a couple of books. You're an executive coach. We're going to talk about that, but you talk a lot about identity and it's just a really huge topic. There's so much gold in here, Corey. I don't even really know where to start. But what I thought I would do is I'm going to give you a couple of quotes and then that really resonate with me. Maybe you can kind of use those to expound on those. So here's one. You have to know yourself so you can forget yourself so you can freely give yourself.
Yeah. I do How love you. I do love you picked a quote by someone else other than me in the book. That's fantastic. That's awesome. But that's a favorite quote by everybody. And that's from, you know, the coach I ended up hiring. But it starts with just knowing ourselves, our strengths, our weaknesses, and, you know, kind of knowing who we are. And when we show up somewhere, knowing who we are, and a big piece of that is, for, you know, since we're talking some, you know, faith for sure on this, is by knowing that we're beloved sons and daughters of God and that we're working from a place of approval as opposed to for approval. Then when I show up, I, instead of having to win everyone's opinion of me and try to get their approval, I should know that I already have my identity. And because I know who I am, I can forget myself and I can show up and I can just be present. How can I listen as opposed to just waiting to talk? How can I be curious to learn more about you? You know, how can I be more about the relationship instead of just the result? And you know, getting to know you, and maybe that adds to additional conversations down the road, as opposed to, I just want to make sure I crush this podcast because it's all about me, you know? And so it's trying to, that's kind of the idea of this whole quote is by understanding who we are, we then can, you know, give ourselves into situations.
Yeah. I'm going to repeat what you said because that resonates with me, working from a place of approval rather than for approval. And I do think, I mean, and I'm preaching to myself here. I've had to do a lot of work on myself in that regard, Corey, not working for approval, but I'm already approved. I'm already everything I need to be right in Christ. And yeah, I just, that resonates. Why, you know, tell me a little bit more. I'd love to camp out because I do think, I don't know if you know the name Jeremy Kubitschek, but Jeremy is the CEO for Giant. Love Jeremy. And he said that we talked a lot about identity and he's like, you've got to know yourself. I mean, what other things have you learned about identity? And because what we see a lot of times, right, is people attach their identity to what they do.
All the time.
And titles. But those things change.
A couple things. I'll answer that, but I'm really feeling prompted to share this story. So maybe it's for a listener, but I share this in the book. And you can do this, listener, to when you see a sunrise, when you see a sunset, when you're on top of a mountain and you're looking, or when you see the ocean, really when you see anything that you're thinking, wow, that's pretty amazing. And a mentor, we did this. We were in the top of a mountain in Montana, and he's like, hey, look out. What do you see? Oh, you know, mountains and the river down there below. Yeah, give me words. What are words to describe it? And, you know, it's a group of us guys, and it's, oh, it's awesome. And, you know, it's epic. It's majestic. And here we are trying to come up with, you know, cool words, thinking that was the exercise. It was obviously part of the exercise. And as we're doing that, he just, you know, he basically says, yeah, when God made it, he says, it's good. You know, that's all he said, that it's good. But then after he made us, he said, it's very good. And when I heard that the first time, it stuck. That, I mean, the whole experience just stuck. The idea that everything that we think is amazing is just good, but yet he sees us as very good. I've done that teaching to other groups. I've done that teaching to my kids. And even at young ages, it resonates with people. So hopefully for a listener, someone needed to hear that. And that's why I, you know, shared it. You know, from an identity standpoint, I mean, from parenting, it starts at home. Like, what are you complimenting with your kids? Are you complimenting that they scored the goals in soccer? They, you know, were amazing at the dance recital, that they got straight A's? Are you complimenting the achievement, the what they did? Or are you complimenting who they are? And complimenting and giving them the attributes of God that they're living out. And we don't get it perfect all the time in our house for sure, but it's trying to make sure we're complimenting and affirming who they are as opposed to what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so from a parenting standpoint, it works that way. With my clients, when we begin the beginning of the year, you know, the thing every coach wants to do with clients is, hey, what are you going to achieve this year? Write down all your goals. And we'll definitely do an exercise similar to that. But what we also do is, who do you want to become at the end of the year? Like, what do you want others, your spouse, your team, your kids, your suppliers, your customers, what do you want them to say about you? And so it's really thinking about this identity is who do you want to become as opposed to what do you want to achieve?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's powerful. And I love what you just said, because sometimes it's about working backwards, right? You know, mm-hmm. I know you've seen that before, where coaches will say, right, not to get too much of a Debbie down here, but talking about writing your own eulogy, what would you want people to say, right? And you work backwards from that, right? And there's intentional things that we can do to make sure that we end up where we are hoping that we end up in terms of who we become.
Yeah, absolutely. We, because of that, downer's a eulogy, and I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to die. I don't know, you know, will I be 80? I don't even know what people are going to say about 80. But so what I've done and have, you know, clients go through is, I just call it your best decade yet. The idea mm-hmm. that none of us have lived our best decade yet, because there's different books out there that say, you know, it's a good, great book called Decade by Decade, says it's your 60s is the best decade. And then, you know, we some of us have read Halftime, where it talks about the second half of your life's the best. With all that being said, mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? Where my age is at, those years are still ahead. So I believe, in many of us and all the listeners, our best decade yet is yet to come. So write a letter to your future self in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's an emotional exercise. When I did that and I wrote down the ages of my kids that they'll be in 10 years, like, that's a game changer. My oldest is 20 years old. When she's 30 years old, well, that means she could be married. She could have kids.
You could have grandchildren by then.
Oh, God, come on. Man. But all those emotions, it's kind of like, hey, this gets serious. So anyways, your best decade yet. That's an exercise.
I believe it. Yeah, just a little side note. I had Ken Blanchard on the show. He was 83 when he was on the show. He's like, some people decide at the age of 40 that all their best years are behind them. Oh. He said, my best years are ahead of me. And he's 83 years old, you know, and he's still pushing forward. I love it. Well, let's talk about this, because we all have vision statements for our businesses, right? Or we should. Our vision, mission, core values, all that. But you talk about writing a vision statement for your personal life. And you talk about the framework of the five P's. What is your personal vision? I know what your personal vision is, but I'd love for you to tell our listeners. And then what are those five P's? How can someone go about writing this personal vision statement?
Yeah, absolutely. a reason to do the personal vision statement is to avoid burnout and remind you. I mean, it's been said before, you know, we get burned out, not because we forget what we do. We forget why we do it. And I remember the exact night I was in Tampa. I was at a dinner set across the table from a guy in private equity, and he pulled out his phone and he showed me his brand new car and how loud it was going down the street. And here I am away from my, and I have no issues with wealthy people. I know a lot of amazing wealthy people and just, you know, awesome, awesome, awesome. For me, it was his tone in the whole evening, because when we talked work and his car, energy level is way up here. When anything was brought up about family and kids, it just went down. And so that was bothering me some. And then when he pulls out the phone to show me how loud this new car was, I was just like, is this my life? Like, I was president of sales at the time. Is this my life, just to go around, travel the country and make more sales, increase EBITDA, so this guy gets a better car every year? Like, is that my life? And so I was just struggling with it. And I go out to the front of the restaurant, waiting for the car to show up. And I called my coach. I didn't always call after hours, so he probably was curious what was going on. And I just explained, like, is this really my life? And he says, I want you to write a personal vision statement. I was like, what in the world is a personal vision statement going to do to get me out of this jam? He goes, just trust me. So I did. I went through a similar exercise like this, but I'll explain the 5 P's. I went through the exercise, came up with my vision statement, and the vision statement is to connect people to greater performance and even more significant purpose. And so for what that meant for me is greater performance. Anytime I interact with somebody at work, around a campfire, in my own home, I'm trying to think, hey, how can I help them perform better at work and home? Is there a tip I can give them? Is there maybe a question I can maybe ask that will make them think? It just, it helps me just be present, not just talk about sports and weather.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is help them into a greater purpose or more significant purpose. Is if I could connect them to God, then let's go. But if they aren't a believer, it's not the right place, then just serve others, like a greater purpose.
Yes.
So Lisa, as I traveled the country after putting together this statement, it was a significant game changer. When I went there, I knew that I was on assignment. It was my calling to see if I could help someone have greater performance and more significant purpose. If I could connect them to it, then job well done. And if EBITDA improved along the way, great. But I knew my job. And what was cool is it changed my mindset, and EBITDA improved and things got better.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you come up with a vision statement, I'm not guaranteeing you're going to get more profitable. That's not it. But it did work out. And so the 5 P's are problems. That's the first one. What problems have you overcome in your life that you want to help other people overcome? For me, that actually was one of the biggest P's for me personally. It may not be for you as a listener, but for me it was, because my problem was I lost at home. And I didn't want to lose ever again. So I want to make sure that worked. Another piece, passions. List out all your passions. What do you love doing? Some will make money, some won't make money. That's not really the point. Just list all out your passions.
Mm-hmm.
The next is personality. How have you been uniquely and wonderfully made? Write some of those items down. Extrovert, introvert, your Enneagram, your DISC, whatever it is. Just write things down in your personality. Next is potential. What do you see out there in the world that you think needs to be solved or achieved or gone after? You may see something that others don't. I'm on the board of a nonprofit called Aruna. And the executive director, before he started Aruna, he saw on the bottom of the news station he was watching a ticker symbol go across, or an update about how many women were in sex trafficking in India. This guy lived in the United States, but he saw that and it wrecked his world. And he went on. He saw the potential of putting a dent in that. Like if I saw that ticker, I'm not saying I'm heartless, but if I saw something like that, I'd be like, okay, hopefully someone fights that. I'm going to go over here and do something different.
But for him, it pricked his heart.
Yes, it pricked his heart. He saw that there was a potential of his life to put a dent into that number. And so he went after it. And he's run Aruna, and we're in our 11th year, which is pretty darn awesome. And then the very last P is possessions. And what has God given you, whether it's degrees or it's money or whatever it could be that you could then go use to help others? So those are the five P's. I'd write down, for the listener who wants to do this, write down all the answers to those P's. Then just look at it, pray over it, and something's going to percolate to the top to say, that is your statement. And your statement doesn't need to motivate anybody else. You could tell me your statement. I'm like, that's okay, whatever. But it's not for me. Yeah. It's for you. So what gets you excited when you read that?
That's so, so good. And, you know, I don't know if you've done this with your family, Corey, but as you're talking, I'm thinking, what a great exercise to do with your kids. What a great exercise to do with your spouse, if you have a spouse. So
all true. Yes.
Getting everybody on the same page, I think, is really good.
And I'll just warn any listener who goes, tries to do it with their spouse, there may be rolled eyes. There may be the thought, this is dumb. I know from experience, but power through and you usually get to something pretty cool.
Yeah. One of my favorite people on the planet is Rick Lytle, who's the CEO for CEO Forum. And, you know, he did that with his girls at a very young age. I mean, they would do their vision boards and everything as a family. I always thought that was really cool. And they had their own vision statement for their family, but it really was kind of their guiding force, if you will. I mean, all rooted in God, you know, in faith. But I think that's really, really powerful. Well, tell me this. I've got so many questions for you, but Corey, what do you see? I mean, you're an executive coach now for leaders. What do you see as being some of the biggest challenges that leaders are facing today? Can you just name a few of those? And how have you coach them to overcome those things? What are some of those challenges? I mean, there's all kinds. I know burnout, there's all kinds, but what do you see as you're going around coaching people?
I see, a variety of challenges. Some of the ones that are, you know, coming top of mind right now is I will get leaders who are, you know, they're frustrated in an area of their life. And it could be work or it could be home. And what you see often is, especially if it's at home, it's because they haven't applied the same intentionality that they have at work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at work, we have vision statements. We have one-on-one meetings with our direct reports. We've identified what are our rocks or our initiatives for this quarter. And we have all this intentionality at work, but then we come home and we wing it. Do we have a date planned with our spouse? Maybe, maybe not. Have we spent any real intentional time with our kids? Maybe, maybe not. And so I see a big piece in that is it takes intentionality to have success at home, and many leaders don't put in the work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I mean, it's hard at work. We have KPIs, right? Key performance indicators. We understand what we need to go after. It's very ambiguous at home. There are no real KPIs to know. And so, I mean, there are some KPIs I put in place is I want to do 2 dates a month with my wife. When we don't do dates, we drift. And so it's going on dates. I'm paying attention to how many one-on-one times I'm having with my kids and making sure that I'm doing ice cream, I'm doing coffee. I've got a college daughter, making sure I'm sending a text, doing some touch point because it takes intentionality. So I think that's a big one that I see a lot. Another one, as I learned this through one-on-one calls especially, there's a lot of leaders are lonely. And there's a few reasons for you and I talk before you're involved in CEO Forum, and I lead a couple different communities myself. One men's one called Rise, where we've got men who want to win at home, win at work. And so they're engaged. We have weekly calls, really, really cool. And seeing life change through it. But many men and women too, but I primarily coach men, they're mm-hmm. just lonely. They don't have friends. And I mean, this is right. part of my story. When I was president of sales, I was traveling every week, Monday through Friday, and leave it all on the, you know, all on the field, come home. And I did try to, I knew about being intentional home. So I tried, I was trying to be super husband, super dad. But I was talking to my coach and I just said, hey, I'm feeling empty. And he called me out. He said, basically, you're empty because you have no friends.
Yeah.
And as we talked about it, yes, I had friends I could go grab a beer with and talk football. But I didn't have anybody in my life at that time where I had conversations of depth.
Deep conversations.
What right? I did is I put, it's a true story, I put together a list of about 15 guys that I had met up with at different times. And it was about 15, 20 guys. And I went speed dating. I went and met with all these guys, and if we just talk sports and weather, I was like, I don't need any more.
I'm that. Out.
The right. guys where we talk right. sports and weather, I mean, I'm not a complete dud. I still want to talk sports. But we also talked about the ups and downs of our marriages, the ups and downs of interaction with our boss or a coworker or feeling burned out or our relationship with God. If there was depth to the conversation, I was like, yes, I want more of that. I want more of this guy in my life. And so I put together a group of guys and we've been meeting every Thursday morning for, I think, like 8 years. And then in January now, we've been doing this for about as long, we go on an annual guys trip.
That's awesome.
Been a change. And so early on in a coaching engagement with a leader, it's kind of like, hey, are you dating your spouse? Are you being intentional with your kids? Do you got friends? And you can kind of right away, it's like, oh, no, I haven't.
Mm-hmm. And Corey, it's just when you were talking, I was just thinking, again, it's intentionality.
Yeah.
I remember our pastor one Sunday. It was so funny. Our pastor one Sunday, because pastors can be lonely too. Mm-hmm. And I remember him talking about just going through this season where he's like, I have no friends. And he said, so one day he did exactly what you did. He sat down and made a list. And he said, so I started texting guys. You know, oh, I haven't talked to that person in a while. I text him. He goes, all of a sudden, I'm getting 15 texts back saying, yeah, let's have coffee next week.
Yes. He's like, hold on, too many. Hang on.
Yeah. Yes. Too many at that point. But, you know, again, it takes intentionality to make sure that you're solving that. And I'm not I wouldn't call it a problem, but maybe it's a lack, an area in your life that's not going as well. Well,
yep.
There's something you can do about it, right?
I'd encourage you to do something about it. There's accountability that comes in there.
Yes.
There's encouragement. You got someone to call when you're down.
Yes.
So and important. If they're, you know, hopefully there's some fun involved.
Yeah.
Some laughs and just release the pressure valve. That mm-hmm. we'd rather have done with friends and laughter than through just drinking or gaming or whatever the pressure valve release currently is.
Yeah, so good. But, you know, I would say like a lot of leaders, it's always a time constraint. Well, I don't really have time for that. But maybe you don't have time not – maybe you don't have the time not to do it, right? I mean, it's better to do it. But – hey, listen, I've got so much more that I want to talk to you about, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Corey Carlson on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast. I've been having so much fun with Corey Carlson here. Corey is a speaker, an executive coach, an author, and is a civil engineer by education. So right. We've been talking about all kinds of things. But Corey, I read a post that you wrote. It was so good. 3 ways to become a leader worth following. Three ways to become a leader worth following. Why wouldn't somebody read a post like that, right? So can we just dig in here a little bit? I mean, honestly, you start with a Bible verse, 1 Peter 5:23, and shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering in your charge over them, but being examples to your flock. And you said that kind of shepherding piece.
Mm-hmm.
You shepherd what's in front of you. And I thought that was really good. Do you have anything to add to that? I mean, there's more here and it just kind of spurred another thought, but shepherding the flock.
I mean, as I think someone even taught me that the kind of breakdown of this verse or just thinking about this verse is it kind of breaks down in a couple of different sections, but are you leading for the right reasons, for the right way, and really for you got the right heart? And in that, it's just kind of thinking about a little bit of, what are the reasons for leadership? I mean, we kind of even talked about this at the very beginning. It's, if I'm not careful for me, when we talked about approval, I could be so about results. And mm-hmm. when I did lead people, I did think, hey, what do I need to do to get these salespeople to do what I need to do so I can get the sales numbers and we can hit our number. Then I shifted, and it's more just about the relationships. And as I invested in them and they did better, well, we got the results. So are you leading, kind of for the right reasons, right? Not mm-hmm. not just to get, but instead to give. So how can you give more to those that you lead? I think a lot about one-on-one meetings where I had a kind of aha moment years ago, where a lot of my one-on-one meetings, I just go there because this is how it was always modeled to me, is they extract information. Almost like show up, extract all the information. How's your territory doing? What's going on? Give me the information so I can turn around and go present well to somebody up the chain.
Yes.
And instead, it wasn't about, hey, just extract information. Hey, how can I give? Like, what resources do I need to be able to try to provide for them or connect them to different people in the organization? So what resources can I help provide? What obstacles do I need to try to remove?
Right.
And it just changed. So just making sure we're leading for the right reasons, mm-hmm. The right way, the right heart.
Yeah, I agree. And the right way, I just read something this morning in my devotion that talked about, only a fool would accept getting results in a wrong way.
Yeah.
There's a right way and a wrong way, right? But yeah, foolish people will, because you can get results in lots of different ways.
Right.
But is it the right way?
Right.
And a fool would go ahead and get results even if it's the wrong way. So that's so good. But it's the right reasons and the right way, the right heart. So good. Well, okay. So I want to talk about your books. So you've written two books.
Yes.
We've already talked a little bit about Win at Home first. Brian Tome.
Yeah.
That we mentioned before, wrote your foreword in this. I love how you talk about in here, Corey, about recalibration. Mm-hmm. I love that word. Mm-hmm. Recalibration. Why don't you, and you've got reflection questions at the end of each chapter, which I really, really love.
Thanks.
We see ourselves getting a little bit off course.
Yeah, I think, the Win Home First book has four parts. First part's on you. We talk about identity. We talk about approval. We talk about, hey, how can you really, kind of take control of yourself in a way that you show up as your best version of yourself everywhere you go. So first part's you, second's marriage, third's parenting, and the last part's on work. The idea of recalibration is just a reminder that just because we screwed up yesterday, Lamentations 3:22 says every morning the Lord gives us new mercies. Like every day is a new day. So stop. We, we need to stop bringing head trash with us all the time. Like, I'm a bad mom, bad dad, you know, bad spouse, bad leader for what happened yesterday. And instead, how can you recalibrate, whether it's daily, whether it's weekly, monthly, quarterly, at different times, having these recalibration periods in your schedule to say, okay, what did I learn from the last quarter or the last week? Where do I need to grow? Where do I need to put some intentionality? And then applying that intentionality and then, you know, moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading a book a long time ago. I'm going blank on the name, but it talks about a torpedo. How a torpedo in the water is, you know, it's pointed towards the submarine, but it constantly is recalibrating as it's shot.
Yeah.
You know, like where most shotguns, as you shoot, well, it goes where you aimed. I mean, obviously there's wind force and it may, you know, may not make it as far as you thought, but it's not recalculated in the air like a torpedo does.
Yes.
And so there's a little bit of that is as we're aiming for whatever goal we have in our life, we need to recalibrate to be like that torpedo that's redirecting itself throughout the water to hit the target. Mm-hmm. Same thing applies to us to be a better husband, wife, parent, leader, that we can continue to recalibrate to show up better.
Yeah, that's a great metaphor. I really love that. Well, okay, let me ask you this. And you already talked about a few of these tactics, like, you know, KPIs, like having two dates a month with Holly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're good about that. But what, you know, let's just face it. There are so many things that are tugging at all of us. We have all these competing demands. What do you believe, Corey, are some of those daily habits that we can incorporate into our life to help us stay on course in the midst of all of these competing priorities?
Yeah. One is buy an alarm clock. Buy an alarm clock and don't use your phone. If you can at all possibility, the greater you can increase the gap between when you last look at your phone at night and you go to and you lay your head on the pillow, the better. And I've been guilty of this myself. And some people are like, well, you know, I may see the email, but I didn't reply to the email. Well, you laid in bed thinking, well, I in the morning, I'm going to write this email. And then actually, I probably need to make an Excel spreadsheet to kind of show the flow. And then I need to do this. And so you just spend a lot of time in your when you should be sleeping or maybe reading another type of book. And so, you know, charge your phone in the kitchen, charge your phone in the bathroom, just try to charge your phone away from the nightstand.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's listening who's like, well, I've got a college kid. I haven't need my phone by my bed in case something happens. Okay, I get it. If you got to have your phone by you, do it. You just got to be super disciplined that you don't fall asleep scrolling social media, looking at the news. So that's one piece. Increase it when you go to bed. The other works the same way. In the morning when you wake up, increase the gap as long as possible before you grab your phone. I talk about this in Rise and Go. Cycle of awesome versus cycle of awful. Cycle of awesome is a phrase, you know, we're familiar with, right? Our thoughts lead to our actions, which lead to our results. Our thoughts lead to feelings, lead to actions, lead to results.
Mm-hmm.
Cycle of awful is when we start our day by looking at the results. We grab our phone. We see, did that post I do yesterday, did it go viral? Did anything cool happen? Did we get that? Did that client send back the change order? Did the prospect say yes? And we check our email for that. We go looking for the results.
Yeah, that's good.
Odds are none of that happened while we slept. And so we start off frustrated. We looked at the results. We then went to, then our thoughts are, man, it's going to be a bad day. That client didn't say yes. Oh, and, you know, and there was a shooting downtown. Oh, and this happened across the country. And, oh, this is happening in the political world. All things that we can't control. But we start our day with the results of the world. And then that leads to our thoughts that we think we're not enough. And it's not going to work out today. Then our feelings are we're discouraged. And then guess what? Our actions are we show up less than. And we don't give our best effort. And I think it's so often because we start the day looking at our phone.
Yeah.
And if
we
can start the day thinking of gratitude, scripture, journaling, meditation, working out, like a variety of ways to start your day, I think can be so significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. We are starting with the results. Yeah, that's good. Well, we've got a little bit more time here. I would love people to understand just how intentional you are in this, you know, win at home first. I would love for you just to really, if you can, just encapsulate it in a short little story here, Corey, what you guys did for Kylie, I guess your oldest, that's now 20.
Oh, wow.
When she turned 13. What did you guys do? I mean, the intentionality behind that was amazing. I love it. And there may be people with younger kids on the call that can take that and implement it for themselves.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks, Lisa. It's cool. To the listener, if you hear this story and you want to go copy and paste it, do it. It's in my book, and go get the book and do the exact same thing we did, or tweak it however you want. Go for it. And so for us, what happened was our daughter's now 20, and we've done this for both of our daughters. I have three kids, two daughters and a son. And we've now done it for both of our daughters. We will do a version of this for our son. Well, what happened was when our daughter was turning 13, we wanted to do something for like an identity ceremony. And going into it, we knew there were materialistic identity or kind of ceremonies like MTV. I can't remember the name. My sweet 16th birthday, or I don't know, whatever it was.
Right.
You know, you get this brand new amazing car. And maybe we just did all this because we knew we weren't going to get an amazing car for our kid. We wanted to do something cool. I don't know. Well, we weren't going to do something like that. There's a lot of great father to son ceremonies. There's good mother to daughter, but there really wasn't anything for a father to a daughter that I could find. There may be something out there now, but I just couldn't find anything. And I want to be involved in it. And I also want my wife involved in it. So what we did is kind of taken a hodgepodge of about a bunch of other ideas that we had and we had seen, but we went to Proverbs 31, which is the godly woman proverb. And we just felt that God calling us out to five different words to affirm our daughter in that, generosity, character. I don't even remember all five at this moment on the spot here. But anyways, we identified five words. Well, what we did is we then put together a list of women that impact her life and then men that impact her life. And so there are Holly's and my close friends. And we assigned a word to each of those people. They each got one word, and they were to write a letter. What does that word mean to their life? What does that word mean to a 13-year-old girl? And we got these letters back, Lisa. And this was before ChatGPT. I was blown away by the wisdom of all of our friends that we got. It was incredible. And then we then put it together in a book, like a Snapfish book. Awesome. It was so, so cool. The night of each of their individual birthdays, we had some of those people come over, read the letters, talk about the letters, and it was awesome. It was emotional, very, very cool. Well, then one of the highlights was towards the end. So the book was great, the words, people talk around the table, reading these letters. I mean, all that was great. So it's kind of crazy to think we could even top it. But at the end of the night, I had heard somebody do a teaching on Exodus 38:8, where the women had to hand over their bronze mirrors to be melted for the sinks, basically the wash basins of the tabernacle. And I was like, that's so cool. And so I kind of took this one thing I heard that they melted them. And I'd also done, this is what I'm talking about. We just took a bunch of cool ideas and tried to blend it all together. But I heard that one verse. I then had done burn the ships idea. You kind of write your sins on a piece of paper and you throw them in the fire and they go away. That idea.
Yes.
So what we did is we got two bronze mirrors. One bronze mirror, I asked, and like I said, we did this individually to each of our daughters. But I asked them to write down what are their identity issues? What are their character challenges? And I don't know what they wrote as confidential, but my thought is they probably wrote, how many guys like me, getting straight A's, how am I doing in dance for the oldest, gymnastics for the younger? you know, how many people, you know, Snapchat followers I have, Instagram followers, like that. I'm sure that would have been all the things on their list that they wrote on this mirror. We then took the mirror, and after we, you know, I got it, I didn't look at it, but I took the mirror. We then threw it on the fire and we watched it melt. And we told them that their identity is not in how many guys like them, how many social media followers they have, whether they got the, you know, the trophy at the dance recital or not, or they got straight A's or not. That is not their identity. Their identity is in these five words. So we then gave him a new bronze mirror where my wife embroidered the words on the on a casing for it. And that these are God attributes that we see in each of you that we want to affirm you in. And we want you to live into them as opposed to what we just melted.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And that's, it was so cool.
So beautiful. So cool.
Yeah. And there was a cool, like I think it was the next day, the very next day. So where our how we in their old house used to live in, when my daughter was, she was on the phone and I was down at the bottom of the stairs and I could hear everything. And she was on the phone with and on speaker with her two of her good friends. And she go, they said, hey, so what'd you get for your birthday? And she goes to explain the ceremony and kind of what it was in this book. And then they go, is that it? And my heart just dropped. I was like, son of a gun. Are you serious? And my daughter just says, yeah. And the two other girls says, oh, I wish we would have had that. And I was like, oh, yes, yes. But they liked it. And the reason I just share that part of the story is all of our kids are, you know, longing for us to affirm them in their identity and who they are as opposed to what they've done.
Oh, so good. That's gold.
So, well, thanks for letting me share it. It's, yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, let's just talk real quickly about Rise and Go. I mean, here's what I really want our listeners to do. I want our listeners to go get your books.
Thank you.
You need an executive coach. Engage with Corey. Follow him. He's got a podcast. That's the other thing. He's got a podcast that is in the top 1.5% of podcasts, which there's 3 million podcasts. So that is really cool. But, you know, the foreword of this, Corey, was written by a guy I love.
Oh, me too.
Jordan Rayner. I love him. He was a former Something Extra podcast guest. And wow. Follow Jordan too. He's got The Creator in You and Redeeming Your Time. You know, the subtitle is, and I love this, it's how to get back up with courage and move forward with confidence. You know, and Corey, the deal is if we live for any length of time, you know, we're going to get knocked down.
Yep.
We're going to get knocked down. I mean, why did you write the book? What are you hoping listeners will take from the book?
I don't know how much time we got left. I know we're going longer for you, but you know, really for me, I mean, the whole thesis of the book is, you know, all leaders get knocked down. It's just the great leaders get back up quicker. So what could it look like in your life if the next time you got knocked down, big or small, you were able to get up quicker? And so that is kind of the whole thesis of it. And for me, March 1st, 2020 is when I left corporate altogether. We went all in on coaching. Like, here we come. My family, we made the decision. We decided, hey, it's time to go. That's March 1st, 2020. And we know what happened in 2020. March 13th, so 2 weeks later, is when the world shut down and we had to do masks and stay at home mandates. On that day, I got some emails canceling workshops and speaking engagements. 35% of my revenue vanished. And I know for some listeners, they're kind of like, you know, wah, 35%. I lost my job. I lost a loved one. I get it. I'm, you know, sorry for that. For us and for our life, we didn't know what was going to happen next. 35%. What about the other 65%? I was scared. I was knocked down. And in that summer, over that course of those next few months, and God just took me on a journey. He pointed me to different podcasts. I got to hear cool stories of resilience. Pointed me to different scripture, different conversations. And I just, there was just a stirring that started to take place. Well, in the ESV, the English Standard Version, In Acts 8, 9, and 10, three different individuals are told to rise and go do something bold and courageous. And I could unpack each of those stories and instances, you know, if we'd like. But the deal is they went and did it. And as I'm reading this, I really just felt a nudge of like, rise and go. Like, stop your pity party in the in the basement. Get going and go do what you've been, you know, called and equipped to do. And so I started, and what ended up happening was that during that time, I still was, you know, reading my devotion. As kind of, there's some cool parts of 2020. I did a deep dive in reading different scripture that helped me get back up. And during that time, I'd have clients call, and they were struggling with whatever it may be. And I said, you know what? I wrote this morning or last week, why don't you read this chapter or this idea? And so it got battle tested. They came back saying, oh, that was super helpful. Or can you go a little deeper here? And anyways, because of that, I put together Rise and Go. It's 20 different chapters. They're kind of written like devotions. You open with the scripture. There's some story. There's some leadership content followed by reflective questions. And so 20 chapters, first 10, give you the courage to get back up. The next 10, give you the confidence to move forward. And that's the book.
It's good.
Anytime I write a book, Lisa, it's because something got screwed up in my life. So,
of course.
So if I write a third book, you may just say, uh-oh, what happened to that guy?
What happened to Corey? I always tell that too. I always say I usually serve up whatever God's, you know, making me eat at the time, you know. So, but I love it. And you sent me a copy of it. And in there you said in the first, she said, Lisa, I pray this book will help you rise and go in the tough times of life and leadership. And it's good. That's good.
Use that again? No.
Cool. You should.
That was good.
Hey, let me ask you this. This is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
I we said the word before. I'm going to say it again because I don't think it could be overused. Intentionality. You know, it's not about time management. It's about choice management. We all have the same hours in the day. And if there's an area in your life that's not where you want it to be, you need to be intentional. You need to block out time. You need to write down some action items to take. I mean, I don't know what the next step is for you as the listener, but it's intentionality. You can have anything that you want. You want your marriage restored. You want a better connection with your teenage daughter. You want to improve culture at the office. Whatever it is, it just takes intentionality to get what you want. What you allow, you approve. So if there's something happening in your life that you don't like, you've probably allowed it.
Yeah, no, that's good. I like what you just said. And that is, that's golden too, Corey. You go, it's not time management. It's choice management.
Choice management.
It's choice management. Yeah, Mark Miller says, having a choice is our superpower. Mm-hmm. And so we can choose, right? So, so good. This has been so much fun. Thank you so much for making the time. I love everything that we talked about. I know it's going to help our listeners. And I'm looking forward to the next time getting to spend some time with you, Corey. Keep doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. I know you're very busy. Keep doing what you're doing and leading bold and with faith. And it's just encouraging.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.